Hey, this is Pastor Jay, and you're listening to the Daily Sabbath Podcast. Hey guys, Pastor Jay here. Welcome to the Daily Sabbath Podcast. So today's episode is my third interview with Calvin Smith, a self-proclaimed atheist. And to be honest, my intention for this third conversation was I wanted to try to get away from the intellectual and philosophical type conversations. And with any real conversation you have with real people, sometimes things don't go as planned. And the conversation ended up getting very sort of intellectual and academic again, which is great. But, you know, because of the limitations of time, I think we weren't able to really truly dig into some of these topics that we explored. And so I think it would be really irresponsible of me not to come back to some of those topics, because I know for some of you guys who are listening, maybe this is new information. And so I don't want to leave you with these lingering questions or these new questions that maybe you've never really thought about and haven't had a chance to do much study on. And so in the next episode, I'm going to do sort of a follow-up of this conversation with Calvin and maybe go into a little bit more depth in places where I feel like it was left ambiguous and things could have been explained better or more clearly. And so after you listen to this interview, if there are lingering questions, please make sure you check out the following episode. And also just feel free to reach out to me. You can message me at our Instagram account, Daily Sabbath, or you can email me at j@dailysabbath.com. But enough of that, here is today's episode. Hope you enjoy. All right, welcome to the Daily Sabbath Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Lee. And I am super excited about this for a couple of reasons. One, I'm super excited because this is my first interview back in forever. And so I'm just excited about that. But the second reason why I'm super excited is because of the guests that I have today. You know, inevitably, whenever I talk to people who listen to this podcast, the guest and the episodes that people always mention are the Christian and an Atheist episodes with my guest today, Calvin Smith. And so just a refresher, for those of you guys who are familiar with the podcast, you know him. But just for those of you guys who might be listening for the first time, he's also known as Unquestionable Calvin on TikTok and social media. He is an atheist activist, and he's working with the Secular Alliance of Michigan. Calvin would consider himself to be a skeptic and an atheist, a humanist, and most importantly, a truth seeker. And so, Calvin, thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast again.
Yeah, absolutely, Jay. I appreciate you inviting me on and, you know, thinking of me. I love having these conversations and, you know, I like being on your show and, you know, talking to you. And I appreciate you coming on my show as well when I was doing my podcast. And, you know, we had a really awesome discussion over there. And yeah, it's always nice to talk to you and talk about this type of stuff.
Yeah, and you are entering rarefied air here because you are only the second person who has made three appearances on this show. And so you are in rarefied air here. So congratulations.
All right. I will take my trophy and my prize money anytime.
And yeah, like I was mentioning in the intro, whenever I do talk to somebody who listens to the show, inevitably, they always mention these episodes. And it seems like they're just really intrigued by these episodes. They're intrigued by you. They really enjoy them. I don't know, like, do you have any thoughts of why maybe people enjoy these interviews with you and me so much?
Well, I mean, a first thought that comes to mind is people see, like, you know, Christian and an atheist, and they immediately think, oh, man, there's going to be a fight. You know, this is going to be, oh, someone's going to tear someone a new butthole. You know, like it's going to be a bloodbath. And so people tune in for that reason. So one, I think it's pure curiosity. And two, I think that these subjects are important. You know, it's I think not necessarily the belief in a God or a higher power itself being important, but the whether that claim being true, you know, if there actually is a higher power or a God or something out there. I think that's arguably the most important aspect of our entire existence would be if there was truly and, you know, some sort of higher power that was out there. And it is demonstrably true. It's out there. We just don't have that evidence for it yet. I mean, That's probably the most important question we could ever possibly get an answer to.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to have these conversations and kind of hash it out, get our ideas out there. And if people claim to have evidence for some sort of higher power, I want to see it. Cause you know, if you believe in something, I want to believe in that thing too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. And it's kind of funny to hear you say that, because I think a lot of times maybe people, when they encounter Christians, and granted, maybe it's in like some sort of public setting, and maybe sometimes these Christians are frankly annoying, but a lot of times I think the question will come at some of these Christians who are evangelizing and talking about their faith. It's like, you know, why are you doing this? Like, why are you attacking people with your faith? Or why do you feel like you have to, why don't you just let people be and believe what they want to believe, you know? And I think a lot of times what Christians will say is, well, I mean, if this is really true, right, that there really is this God and there really is a Jesus who died and rose again, like it's the most important thing in the world. And of course, if we care about people, we would want to talk to them about it. And so it's kind of interesting to hear you coming from the other side of things as, you know, an atheist saying, hey, pretty much the same thing. Like, if there really is a God, I mean, is there anything more important? And so these conversations are definitely worth having. And yeah, I agree with you. I think that people, yeah, maybe they tune in initially because they're wondering if we're going to fight. But I do think—
Right. And then when they tune in, realize like, oh, wow, this is actually a really insightful conversation. They're not yelling at each other still, you know, like, wow, look at how much I'm learning instead of just like looking for the win, like counting the hits and, you know, not actually looking at the arguments. I'm here just for the fight type of thing.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why I like doing these types of discussions and why, you know, like doing what I do. It's because that's kind of my whole thing, is I'm trying to defeat the stigma of like being nasty and, you know, mean towards each other about these types of conversations. Like, don't get me wrong, I still have my moments, you know, in person on social media where, you know, I can get a little worked up, you know, if I mean, I'm only human, I admit to it, but all in all, my mission is to defeat that stigma that we're all, you know, we can have these types of conversations without getting worked up and then still learn something in the
end. Yeah, no, for sure. And so I appreciate that. I think that's something that people appreciate about you and these episodes, is that we are able to achieve, I think, real dialogue. And I think that's something that you don't see too often, where people are just sort of kind of talking past each other, talking at each other. But I think we're able to achieve real dialogue here. And so I think people appreciate that.
I agree.
And so for today, you know, Calvin, I think in the times that we've spoken before in the previous two episodes, and also when I was on your podcast, I think the topics tended to be pretty kind of intellectual, kind of philosophical. Mm-hmm. And so today I wanted to take a little bit of a different route and maybe get more of your thoughts and your impressions. So I think one of the things that you've mentioned previously is that you've actually read the Bible a lot. And I think you said that you've read through the Bible at least once, maybe twice. How many times have you read through the Bible?
I've read it completely from cover to cover twice, but I still can continue to read it almost every day. I read, you know, probably 3 or 4 pages of Job this morning, you know, when I was reading for a TikTok video that I made in response to this, because, you know, you can't just, you know, I'm not one of those guys who's going to like cherry pick the and, you know, not get the context of everything. So someone mentioned Job 12, 7 through 10 in a TikTok video. They're like, did you read Job 12, 7 through 10? And I was like, you know what? I did, but I don't remember what's going on. So, you know what? Let's take a look at it. That's pretty much what that video was. And so I read 7 through 10 on the video, but you know, before the video, I obviously read the context of everything, you know, a couple pages before and after, just to make sure everything was cool and clear, you know, and that I wasn't being that guy who just picked a verse that someone said and, you know, said it. Okay. So, I don't mean to toot my own horn or anything, but I do think that I know more about the Bible than most Christians do, if I'm being honest. I mean, maybe I'm tooting my own horn, but. Yeah, I think it's important for because, you know, I started reading the Bible as kind of a believer. I more so was agnostic, but I mean, at the time I started reading it the first time, if someone would have asked me, I probably would have said that I was a Christian at that time. But in deep inside, I was like, I'm not 100% sure right now. Even still now, I'm not 100% sure. Not that I'm claiming to know for certainty.
Yet. Okay.
But I've definitely read it a couple times, and I read the Quran and the Bhagavad Gita, and I started reading the Book of Mormon. It's incredibly boring, so I only got like maybe a quarter of the way into it, mm-hmm. and then just it kind of fell off. I still need to pick it up and read it again, but oh man, it's so boring.
All right. Well, I give you permission not to read it. I'm just kidding. But okay. So yeah, so you're very familiar with the text. And so I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts, your impressions, just in reading it as a text. Like, what is your impression of who Jesus is, the importance of Jesus, what his message was? Like, if you were going to try to summarize from your reading of the text, what thoughts would you share about like what it presents to us about Jesus and who he is and what his message is?
So it's kind of interesting. I kind of touched on kind of going back to TikTok again. Sorry again. But so I made a TikTok about this maybe a day or two ago about how 77%. So now you mentioned Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and Jesus, he comes into the New Testament. I'm not sure if you or many people know this, but 77% of the Bible is the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. That is 77.6% of the Bible is the Old Testament. Yeah. So think of watching an hour and a half long movie, and the main character, the main guy that you want to see, the guy who's on the cover of the movie, you don't even see him or hear his name until the last 20 minutes of the movie. That's essentially what's happening with the Bible, is that Jesus is absolutely nowhere named or mentioned. Now, they mention the Christ, or they mention, you know, a Messiah, or, you know, something to that effect, but they never specifically mention Jesus mm-hmm. Anywhere in the Old Testament. Nowhere is that name found. So anyways, so I would think of Jesus as being a person who took the ideas of the Old Testament and refined them to his liking. I would kind of look at Jesus as being, if I'm being honest, just another apocalyptic preacher of the time. You know, apocalyptic preaching was, mm-hmm. you know, even today, it's nothing, you know, that's gone by any means. People are still doing it. And I, you know, it definitely was happening even more back in those times. Mm-hmm. So I feel like Jesus was just a guy who had a lot of apocalyptic preachings that were based off of ancient Near Eastern and Jewish cultural norms and stories, and essentially refining those and finding out what his local community likes, and getting a small group of people that you know, he got a cult following from, and that cult following grew, and his teachings grew, and his story got more and more exaggerated as time went on. And it eventually turned into, you know, the Paul Bunyan of today. You know, it's how I look at it, as it's no skin off my back. If Jesus Christ was a real person who existed, you know, I'm still honestly still kind of on the fence as to whether this Jesus from the Bible was even a real person. Mm-hmm. I'm still kind of on the fence as to, is this guy just purely a character in this book? I'm not totally convinced, but I digress. It's regardless of the things that were said that he did in the Bible, the question is, did he actually do those things? And did he actually say those things? Did he say the red parables in the Bible, you know, the colored red mm-hmm. parables? Is that what he actually said? How do we know that's what he said? Bottom line is we don't. We just don't know. We believe it. You know, you can believe it. You can read it in the Bible and it says Jesus said this, but what reason outside of that do you have to think that he said that or did that or that happened? Or so how I look at it as is that Jesus is just a guy, if he existed at all, was just a guy from ancient Near East, and he had some teachings that people caught on to, and it spread, and now it's the world's largest religion.
Okay.
And I mean, I feel like that's not uncommon. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at, you know, Hinduism and Islam and, you know, these other religions, and that's, I mean, look at Scientology, for example. That's basically what's happened with Scientology. It started off as a very small cult following of people, and now there's, you know, almost hundreds of thousands of people that are following mm-hmm. Scientology.
Yeah. So you're saying very that clearly made up religion. Just because there's a lot of people who follow something doesn't necessarily mean that it's true or it.
Yeah. Correct.
Okay, so let's kind of go into some of that. So it's interesting to hear you say that. So let's just start with like the text itself, right? Well, first of all, like in the New Testament, and I think you're still kind of questioning the historicity of it, the reality of it outside of the text. But just within the world of the text itself, right? You know, Jesus's claim was that he was the fulfillment of all of these promises that you see in the Old Testament, or the Hebrew scriptures is a more PC term, and that, you know, all of them actually testify of him. And so, you know, a lot of times Christians, when they're studying the Old Testament, and granted, there are portions of the Christian community who feel like, the Old Testament, it's old. We don't need that anymore, right? Which is extremely uninformed, because exactly like you said, Jesus's Bible was the Old Testament. And so much of the Bible is the Old Testament. And really, what we would believe is, to understand the New Testament, you actually have to understand the Old Testament, because it is what leads up to and makes sense of everything that happens in the New Testament and what happens in the ministry of Jesus.
You have no idea how glad I am to hear you say that, because that's an argument that I get into literally almost every day, is Christians disregarding the Old Testament. Mm. And it's like, so, and then they'll say, but the Ten Commandments. Mm. And I'm like, oh man, you just caught yourself, right? You know, boy.
So they want part of it, but they don't want
part of it. Yeah, that drives me crazy. It's like, you can't have the New Testament without the Old Testament. I'm glad that,
that you say that. So that's why I'm kind of, I find it interesting that in your reading of the Bible, like, so again, kind of disregarding whether or not you think it actually happened, but just like living in, within the world of the text itself, that in your reading of through the Bible, you have not seen any connections between the Old Testament and some of the prophecies and the promises that God was making to, you know, the Israelites and the Jewish people. And then what happens with Jesus and the, like, you don't see any correlation there?
Not really. So how I see it is, so correlation isn't causation. So just because these things, so, you know, the Old Testament happened, and there's even portions of the Old Testament that are even thought to be closer to when the New Testament was actually, you know, beginning to be written, small portions of it. And so it makes you sit back and think, like, okay, so how is it even possible that they could have seen these things in the Old Testament, said, okay, this needs to happen, enable for this to happen. Couldn't they just say that it happened in the New Testament? And I mean, it's an unfalsifiable claim, drawing a blank on anything that I could use as an example right now, but
like that he was going to be born in Bethlehem, that he was going to be
right.
A
like
Nazarene.
How are we going to test that right here today, right now? How can we test that and prove that to know that that was fulfilled? We can't.
Well,
so,
I mean, you might be able to. It depends on if there's any extant historical evidence.
Right. Yeah. I guess let me clarify that we could. There are ways that we could test that, but do we have that evidence? Do we have that reason to believe in that claim? I mean, not to say that there isn't, you know, true things and true events, true people, et cetera, that, you know, are in the Bible and are present in the Bible, and there's, you know, King Nebuchadnezzar, definitely real person, you know, not a doubt in my mind. There's a plethora of evidence to corroborate his existence, but it's like when it goes down to the supernatural or paranormal things that happen, like talking about King Nebuchadnezzar, when he just gets down on the grass and just starts eating grass for a number of years. I think it was like 3 years or something. He was eating only grass, like a cow.
Yeah, I don't
like
remember how long, but he basically went insane for a period of time.
Yeah. And there is literally, like, I really searched for some sort of corroboration for that. Like, cause I feel like if a king just got down and just started eating grass for a number of years, that somebody would have written that down, like, somewhere. Nowhere. It does not exist. There is absolutely not a single person on the planet that ever said that they saw him eat grass even once. So why would I believe?
Well, there's at least one person, right? Because somebody wrote that. Yeah. But I understand what you're saying. Somebody outside of the scripture writers. But I mean,
right, because it's like, did that person actually see it, or did they just,
but I mean,
you know,
there is still at least one person, right? Because I think, to be fair, sometimes I think we disregard the fact that, yeah, there are people who are claiming to be witnesses of certain things, who are writing these things, which have been preserved in these New Testament documents, but we discount them because, well, they have an ulterior motive, you know, they're believers, they're followers of this thing, so their word can't be trusted. We kind of disregard it as, this is not real evidence, which, I mean, I understand that there is obviously the possibility that this person has ulterior motives and could be deceptive, right? Because they're trying to promote, you know, this thing that they believe. But it's also, you have to admit, it's also a little unfair to say, just because I support this particular position, therefore my words don't count. So it seems like the only words that could count would be like, okay, so we have the testimony of the people who actually wrote the New Testament documents, like that Jesus rose from the dead. Then you also have documents of maybe like early, you know, early church fathers who say that they knew, you know, they were associates of the apostles who were witnesses of Jesus rising from the dead, right? So you have these testimonies that say, hey, we either saw it or we knew the guys who saw it, right? But it kind of seems like we disregard those, like, well, they're believers, so that can't be trusted.
So I wouldn't disregard them just simply because they're believers. I would disregard them because I see no reason to believe them other than saying, I know a guy who knows a guy who did this. You know, like if I met someone on the street and they told me that they know a guy who rose from the dead and ascended into heaven, why would I believe him other than that reason? Like, what? So I enable for me to believe this guy on the street that said, hey, let's even go even further. My best friend, let's say my best friend approaches me and says, hey, I saw a guy that ascended into heaven. Mm-hmm. He rose from the dead and he got hit by a car and then ascended into heaven. I watched it happen. I was a witness and there was a bunch of other people there. Okay. Mike, that's his name. So I would say, okay, Mike, can you give me a witness? Just some, who else was there? Mm-hmm. Who else was there with you?
Yeah.
Oh, well, couldn't tell you. Couldn't tell you any, and not a single of the 500 people that were there. I couldn't tell you a single one of their names. Mm-hmm. Okay. Did anyone else write this down? Did anybody else write this down? Anyone? No, none of the 500 people wrote this down. How can you prove to me that there were 500 people there? Well, I can't. I have no reason other than telling you that 500 people. You see what I'm getting at? Is that like him just saying that the stuff happened, even though he's my best friend, I all in all, you don't know what's going on in their head. You don't know what alternative motives they may have. You don't know if they had some sort of psychotic breakdown. You don't know if they're being manipulated by somebody else to push a different motive, or you know, anything. You really don't know. Even though this is my best friend, I still would not believe him.
Yeah.
So why would I believe a guy thousands of years, you know, in a book that's thousands of years previous to me, some random guy who I'm not even sure existed? Why would I believe that when he says a guy said this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess if your friend just tells you, hey, I saw a red bird, it's easy to accept that testimony because there's nothing unbelievable about it. There's nothing amazing about it. But the more unbelievable something is that somebody tells you, I guess maybe the more likely you are to be skeptical. So if your best friend tells you, hey, I saw a guy rise from the dead, there's a natural skepticism that would come into play. So I get that part. I get the part where it's like the more fantastic and more unbelievable the claim, the more likely you are to be skeptical, even if it's somebody you trust.
Correct.
But
yes, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. That's pretty much where I'm coming from.
So, I mean, that makes sense. And it is not my belief that people come to believe that Jesus really rose from the dead and that he lives now, you know, necessarily because they were presented with a bunch of historical evidence or, well, here's all of the, you know, eyewitness testimonies and their affidavidats and, you know, their certified statements. And, you know, here's how many of them we have. Like, I don't think most people come to believe because they saw a bunch of that kind of information. But I do think, though, there is, considering that this is something that happened 2000 plus years ago, there is evidence. I mean, there is testimony. And again, going back to what you're saying, maybe it's not enough evidence for you to say, I believe it now. Like I said, I don't think too many people come to believe it because they were presented with a bunch of evidence. But I think there is evidence still. And I think there's a decent amount of evidence that could at least make a person say, that's interesting, considering that this is something that happened 2,000 years ago. So for instance, like at the beginning of our interview, you were talking about how you're still kind of on the fence of whether Jesus is even a real person, right? And so, I mean, stop to think like, okay, what would convince us that Jesus was a real historical person? Well, one, some sort of eyewitness testimony that is recorded, that is, you know, contemporary from that time. But also on top of that, well, if the only eyewitness testimony that we have that is contemporary from that time, which obviously we have the New Testament documents, because the New Testament documents, regardless of whether you believe the truth claims, they are pretty reliably dated back to the first century. So they're at least contemporary. And then, you know, the witness of early church fathers. But I think probably a skeptic would say, well, if I really want to believe Jesus really existed, I need to see eyewitness testimonies from people who are not Christians, right? Like who are not people who followed this religion. And we have that too, right? We have, you know, a handful, which, you know, maybe, I don't know exactly how many, maybe there's like five or six, but there's five or six Roman or Jewish historians who are not, at least not that we know of, are not Christians, who are not followers of Jesus, who testify that there was this guy named Jesus of Nazareth.
Now, could you, I already kind of know what names you're thinking of.
Well, there's only five of them, so like, yeah, I would think that
Tacitus, Suetonius, Josephus. Who else is there?
I don't know. You're right, though. It's those guys. I don't
know. But those three. So those three, they were all born anywhere between 30 CE to 200 CE. Mm-hmm. Anywhere in between there. So that quite literally means that they would have lived well after Jesus would have lived according to the chronology of the Bible. And to be fair, none of those people specifically said that they were firsthand witnesses of Jesus. None of them ever did. They claimed to, again, to have known people who knew Jesus, mm-hmm. or knew people who knew a guy who knew Jesus, or knew a guy who thinks he saw Jesus in a dream or something like that. But to be fair, those three people and the other couple of people whose names are totally escaping me right now, they never once claimed to have seen Jesus or be firsthand witnesses. And frankly, they historically could not have, because we have not their exact day of birth, but we have their years of birth indefinitely. Yeah.
So, but isn't that how we know how anybody from history existed? I mean, none of us living today are eyewitnesses of anybody who lived in history before our lifetimes, right? Mm-hmm. So,
and I only believe the people that existed that we have evidence to believe they existed. So, like George Washington, that's usually the one that people, mm-hmm. you know, usually go to is, oh, you know, why do you believe George Washington existed? Well, we quite literally have his body.
We have his body somewhere.
He was president of the United States, yeah. right? You know, that's
we think
pretty major deal.
I'm taking somebody else's word for it.
I'm pretty sure that the like Declaration of Independence and, you know, these types of things are pretty noteworthy documents of historical times, and, you know, other people that were there and can corroborate his existence. So you go back to the witnesses of Jesus Christ, name me one.
But aren't you, okay, let's stay on this example they're raising. Now, obviously it's, it feels different because George Washington is not nearly as ancient as Jesus of Nazareth.
Exactly. And George Washington wasn't making any supernatural claims that he could.
But I think part of the issue though is part of your argument is that you've already a priori dismissed it because it has supernatural claims. Like that's part of your evidence of the fact that the testimony is not reliable. To be fair,
because supernatural things don't exist. So I don't have a reason to believe in supernatural things until it's been demonstrated. So it being put in a book is no different than me looking at like Harry Potter and seeing, you know, the magic wand, mm-hmm. and Harry Potter. And I'm like, okay, what are the two differences between these things? Well, I tell her now we have more evidence for Harry Potter's existence than we have for Jesus's. Yeah. So let's, you know, at least we can look at Daniel Radcliffe in the face.
So, let's stay on your example here with George Washington. So obviously it's different because George Washington is much more modern, not as ancient. And let's just kind of forget for a second about, you know, the idea of supernatural claims, but just, did this guy exist? And at least to me, when I'm listening to you, I feel like all of the evidence that you just said for why you believe George Washington exists is all the same evidence that I'm using for why I believe Jesus existed. It's just that you don't accept, maybe because it's more ancient, but it seems like
no,
because you're saying that there's contemporaries of George Washington who mm-hmm. talked about him, who we've never seen them either. How do I know that any of those guys existed? There's no video evidence, but also there's a document, right? The Declaration of Independence that purportedly records things that George Washington or just this body of people have said that have been passed down to us.
And I know what you're saying. So it's like, how do you dismiss the Bible, but not dismiss these
not the supernatural parts, but just on the question of, did these people really exist?
Right. So because again, witnesses, again, you can look at, you know, the people who signed the Declaration of Independence. You can get evidence that, you know, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin, all these people actually existed to corroborate George Washington's existence. We have clothing and bedding and stuff.
But isn't that evidence also the same kind of evidence, which is like, so, okay, you're saying I can corroborate George Washington's existence because I can, I can corroborate the existence of John Adams. How? Because of testimony of other guys that I've never seen.
So we have Josephus, right? You look at, for example, if we look at like Josephus as being, let's say he's claiming to be a firsthand witness. Yeah. Well, the guy that he talked to, who's that guy that he talked to? We don't know. We don't know who this guy, he says he talked to a guy who says he said, or he, that he talked to an apostle. This apostle was unnamed. How do we know that apostle saw Jesus? Well, the book claims that the apostle saw Jesus. Well, who wrote that? You know, if that was before Josephus. See what I'm getting at is that we don't know who is writing these things down. We can follow the trail all the way back to George Washington. We can follow it all the way back to John Adams or Ben Franklin or Abraham Lincoln, whoever it is. We can follow a trail, a paper trail back to these people, but you can't follow a paper trail back to Jesus, especially take away the Bible. What do you have as far as evidence outside of the Bible for Jesus existing? Like what else is there?
Well, you've already dismissed the evidence of these non-Christian writers that we were talking about. So yeah, I mean, if you're going to dismiss these, you know, because this is something that happened 2000 plus years ago, right? So, you know, but if you're going to dismiss the testimony of the few, you know, non-Christian testimonies that we do have that this guy really existed, then yeah, I mean, I guess you're only left with Christian witnesses. Well, I mean, there's also the writings of outside of the New Testament that are from Christians, but yeah, definitely the New Testament writings are by far the main source of our knowledge of him. But it seems like you're dismissing that.
So I know you mentioned first century. So I'm not sure if you're aware, but the New Testament, the earliest known writings of the New Testament only go back to like the third, maybe the fourth century is like the absolute furthest back. So we have absolutely nothing, literally no contemporary writings from the first century that corroborate Jesus in any way, shape, or form. So if those writings don't exist and we just have people saying things, you know, saying that Jesus existed, said that he did this, and we're not able to lead that paper trail all the way back to Jesus, why would I believe that Jesus did any of these things? How do I know that, you know, again, these scribes that were writing the Bible and translating the Bible for hundreds or thousands of years, how do I know that not even one of them had some sort of ulterior motive to change a word, when in fact we have lots of evidence of scribes being caught changing the Bible and its words? Like, that's not even a secret. That's not even questionable. It's an absolute fact that scribes have been caught and severely punished for editing the words in the Bible and attempting to publish it. And in some cases, it actually worked. I mean, look up the blasphemous comma, for example. I can't remember I know it's in Luke, but I can't remember the exact verse. But the blasphemous comma put a comma in the wrong place, and it made Jesus out just from that one comma being there. It made Jesus look to be a murderer from that one simple comma being there. And like, I cannot remember it. I could send you what the verse is and everything on it, but it's called the blasphemous comma. Mm-hmm. And it's a very big thing, especially in older King James Bibles, until it was later changed. I think in the early 1800s is, I think, when they initially caught it and were like, oh, shoot, we need to fix that so that it doesn't look so bad, because I'm pretty sure it's not supposed to be there. And it wasn't, you know, that was a mistake that was put in there. So who's to say that there isn't other mistakes throughout the Bible or exaggerations in the Bible that were put in there from someone else that made things seem more extraordinary. And why would I believe those things outside of what the Bible says? Especially when it comes to Jesus and him being the Son of God, or, you know, God incarnate, however you want to define that.
Yeah. I mean, we're touching on a lot of different issues here, and things of which you and I, frankly, are not super qualified to really.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's fair, right? Fair. Like, you know, because right now I think that the issues that we're talking about are getting into the manuscript evidence. And yeah, you and I are probably not equipped enough to be able to discern between, you know, varying views. But I understand what you're saying. Well, first of all, that issue that you identified about the murderous comma, I'd be interested to hear about that. But my understanding is that the Greek manuscripts don't have punctuation. So I imagine that might be maybe a translation issue. But yeah, in terms of the manuscripts, it is true that we don't have any originals. Like, we don't have the original, like, from Paul's hand to us, or from Mark's hand to us. But I would dispute, and I think, again, this is something we'll have to defer to the experts, but I think there's plenty of reputable New Testament scholars who would say that, first of all, we have tons of manuscripts, you know, maybe not all complete New Testaments or complete documents, but we have tons of thousands of manuscripts from the New Testament, at least pieces. I do believe there is a fragment that goes back, and, you know, obviously it depends on which expert you're talking to, but we do have a fragment that goes back as early as, like, earlier than 90 AD. But I do believe that we do have some fragments that are dated older than what you're suggesting. But I think the people who do study manuscript evidence, unless you're talking to only the fringest, most skeptical, date the New Testament documents to the first century. So I think we would need to also deal with that if we were going to continue to go down this trail of, you know, talking about the reliability of the Bible. It's not just how old is the oldest manuscript that we have, but how old is the original writing of this document, right? And so we would have to debate whether or not there were significant changes introduced between the original writing of the document and the oldest manuscript that we have. So that is definitely a debate. But in terms of the dating of the original documents, I think there's plenty of scholars who would date these New Testament documents back to the first century, which puts them in contemporary times with the events that they supposedly speak of, including the life of Jesus, the life of the apostles.
I would encourage you, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the author David Fitzgerald. I had him on my podcast. He is he's a Jesus mythicist. He's buddies with, like, Bart Ehrman and stuff like that. And I interviewed him on my podcast, and then he came out to Michigan maybe a month or two ago, and he did a book signing on behalf of the nonprofit that I work for. And I met him in person, got a couple books signed by him. But the reason why I bring him up is he wrote a couple books. It's called Nailed: Top 10 Christian Myths on Why Jesus Never Existed at All. And I encourage you to pick that up. And what he does is he breaks down every single person who has ever claimed to have been a firsthand witness, or that people claim are firsthand witnesses of Jesus. He breaks down every single one of them, and he explains how they are not, and what evidence and what reason he has to not believe that. So he has two volumes of that, and then he also has a book called Jesus Mything in Action, where he breaks down the New Testament more specifically, and he breaks down the ages of the New Testament. He said at this meeting that he was at, to the conference of people, if someone can present me of some evidence that Jesus existed, then I will write a book about not reading any of my old books over the past 30 years of looking for this evidence of Jesus Christ. And again, he clarifies, just as myself, that I truly don't care if Jesus existed or not. I care about the superpowers that he supposedly have, and the superpowers that other people supposedly had throughout the Bible. That's my big contention. You know, again, if someone were to come up to me today with they came up to me with a tooth, and they said, this is, you know, I can show you the evidence that this tooth is Jesus Christ's tooth. Can show me the evidence. I would say, great, cool, I'm convinced. Now prove the magic stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that's where it ends.
Yeah. So this first half of the conversation did not go in the direction that I thought it was going to go. I was trying really hard to steer it into more just kind of examining the text for itself within its own world. But it's okay. I think this was still a good conversation. I think some observations I think that I'm making on my end about kind of your position. One is, I do feel like you've already decided that supernatural things cannot happen. And therefore, I feel like there is actually no evidence that anybody could present to you short of Jesus actually standing before you and you seeing him with your own eyes. Maybe like a Thomas experience where Jesus is standing before you and you can put your fingers in the holes, you know, in his hands and his feet. There's no evidence that anybody could show you to make you believe that a supernatural thing could have possibly happened. So that's one observation that I make, is that it's sort of a priori almost, like it's already dismissed out of hand. The other thing that I think I'm noticing in just kind of this conversation that we've been having, it does feel like we're coming down to a difference of which experts we are believing. You know, that you have your experts that you believe who present certain kinds of evidence about, you know, the historicity of Jesus and the manuscript evidence and the dating and things like that. And then I have my experts and my scholars that I am depending on and their work and their expertise on, you know, the same subjects. And so I think we're coming down to a place where it's like we're drawing on two different sources of knowledge, two different streams of scholarship. And it's kind of hard for us to be able to go beyond that in this moment. I mean, we could study more, but in this moment, it's hard for us to go beyond, well, which experts are right.
What I would clarify is that I don't follow experts. I don't even like to call anybody experts. Mm-hmm. I think that's weird. I don't think you can be an expert in anything, if I'm being completely honest. Expert is such a...
Well, expert could just mean that you know more than the average person about a certain subject.
I don't follow the experts. I follow the evidence that they present. So the fact of the matter is that David Fitzgerald, him along with other people, you know, I'm not just looking at David Fitzgerald. I just use him as an example. And he's someone that I have read a lot about and watched and interviewed him personally. And he has personally communicated with me. We're buddies. So, yeah, I reference him. Mm-hmm. But not to say that there isn't quite a few other people out there that would corroborate that evidence. And that's the whole thing, is that David Fitzgerald is saying, hey, you know, this is the evidence that they're claiming. This is why I don't believe in that. So mm-hmm. you're reading his perspective. And then how I look at it is I don't take anyone's word on faith. Okay. I don't just look at someone and say, you know what? He's right there. You know, just because he said that Jesus doesn't exist. No, I'm taking what he said. I've been reading his like 150 page book for like 3 months now. Mm-hmm. Because I'm really breaking it down. I'm actually personally researching a lot of these people that he's bringing up, because some of these people I don't even, never even heard about. So I don't follow experts. I follow the evidence that they present. So if one of your experts, quote unquote experts, you know, presented something demonstrable and empirical, I believe it, you know, because that's the honest thing to do. That's, you know, I would totally believe it. And that would bring me into my next thing, is that you mentioned that you're kind of getting that I'm kind of closed off, and that there's nothing that could convince me that Jesus was who he was unless he was standing right here before me.
Any miraculous claim.
Right. Any miraculous claim. And to be fair, I mean, I don't really know what it would take to convince me that those magic things happen. But mm-hmm. if in order for me to believe that Jesus Christ, you know, is worthy of my worship, and that it's purposeful, and that he actually is there to listen, and that there is a heaven and a hell, and able for me to believe any of that, it is a requirement for me personally that I need justification for these supernatural events that happened. Really, if I can get solid justification for those events, whatever it may be, I probably would be convinced of the God of the Bible and of Jesus Christ. Now, would I follow those people? Absolutely not. There is absolutely no way that I would follow either of those things. Never. We could go more into that if you really want it. But so it's not that I'm closed off to the information. It's that I don't have a reason to believe that information. You know, saying that people are walking on waters and or walking on water and turning water into wine and rising from the dead and ascending into heaven and, you know, all of these miraculous things. That's just not something that I can take off of faith. You know, what else do I need to take on faith? What other claims of other religions do I need to take on faith? And, you know, what about them? They seem like they have a lot of followers and a lot of people who claim to have evidence for their God too. So it's like, it comes down to, I just don't have a reason to believe it. And if a God or Jesus existed and wanted me to know he existed and loved me and wanted me in heaven with him, all they would need to do is, and they would know how to do it if they were all knowing and all powerful, they would know how to convince me of that without impeding on my free will, albeit. I feel like that's definitely possible for them to do. And they either haven't done it or they're not there to do it or they don't have the power to do it. It's really only one of the three options.
Yeah. But, you know, actually something that you're saying kind of reminds me of some of these stories of Jesus in the Gospels. There's a story in the Gospels where basically Jesus is teaching and he's teaching in parables. And then later on, the disciples privately are like, hey, dude, you know that story you told about the farmer and the seeds? Like, what does that mean? Right? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. I mean, he does explain it to them what it means. But one of the things that he said to them was, like, he who has ears to hear and eyes to see, the secrets of the kingdom have been given to you, but to the rest, only in parables. Which is kind of interesting because I think usually we think of parables as like, oh, Jesus is the master teacher. And he's using these illustrations to make it easier for us to understand it, right? But in that scene, it makes it almost sound like Jesus kind of obscured the teaching, right? And he said, to you guys, I have revealed all the secrets of the kingdom. Everybody else, they get it in parables. And it kind of feels like the difference between, like, because that's a question that I was asking in reading that story. What's the difference between these guys that they get it, just here it is, and everybody else, it's just sort of veiled a little bit. And it kind of feels like the difference was they were actually there following him and seeking him out and like, explain this to us. We want to understand this and giving themselves to really like be his disciples. And everybody else was, maybe they're intrigued. Maybe they're interested. Maybe they, when Jesus came into their town, they came and like, okay, I'm going to check out this Jesus guy. But, you know, so for some people, it completely changed their lives. And other people, he just kind of came in and out of their town and nothing, and they just went back to their lives. And so I guess the point I'm trying to make, sorry, that was a very long way to get to this,
you're good,
is to maybe question one of your premises, which is that if Jesus wanted me to believe in him, I mean, surely he would make that apparent. But I think actually there's a lot of examples in the New Testament where Jesus didn't, not because he doesn't love people, but there seemed to be an onus on people to open themselves up. And he was also totally willing to walk right by you and walk right in and out of your town and let you miss it, basically. So I would just kind of question that premise where, and I'm not saying that this is necessarily you, because I do feel like you've sought the truth much more than the average person, right? So I can't explain why he hasn't just revealed himself to you, right? Because you've been reading his book plenty.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I picked up the Bible the first time as not necessarily a devout believer by any means, but I picked it up because that's what my family believes, is that they believe in the Bible and, you know, they're very devout throughout my family. And they said, if you want to know God, there you go. Pick up the Bible and get to know him. And so I said, you know what? Screw it. Okay. Fine, I'll do it. You know, what version should I read? And they said King James all day. So I said, okay,
there's your first mistake.
King James. Yeah, oh my gosh, I was just about to say, just for clarification, anyone listening out there, if you haven't read the Bible before, please do not start on King James version. Like, not even like it's such a hard, just because it's so hard to read, it's so hard to understand. I skipped over a couple little parts of it, like a couple Psalms and like Songs of Songs and stuff like that. I skipped over a couple things, but not a whole lot. I still would consider it a full cover to cover read through. I don't think I missed any of the important things that happened. And then the second time that I read it through, I picked up an NLT version, much easier translation to read. And I read every single word in that book from beginning to end. Mm-hmm. and annotated it the entire time. It took me 8 months to do it, of reading it almost every day. I took like a 2 week break when I was on vacation, cause I was like, I need a break from this book for a minute. It took me like 8-9 months to read the Bible the second time, as opposed to the first time. It took me like a month to read it because I just was like, you know, reading it without note taking or anything. But by the end of the first read through, I consider myself an atheist by the time I finished it the first time. So, I was like, there's no way I believe in the, like, cause obviously I didn't believe in any other God claims or, you know, higher power claims. So I didn't believe in this one right here, the only one that I'm really familiar with. So I'm atheist. I believe that there was no God. And here I am 7 or 8 years after reading the Bible the second time. And, you know, now I consider myself an agnostic atheist because I can't prove that there is no God. I can't show you evidence of not God. Like that's not something I can do. That wouldn't be an honest position to have. So it's like, I stay agnostic on it. You know, I'm totally open to it. I mean, that's quite literally basically my part-time job is searching for God. Quite literally. I mean, you could put it that way, is my part-time job is searching for God or searching for a God, whatever God or, you know, supernatural or paranormal claim that may be, you know, my part-time job is being a truth seeker.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like if I'm open to it, I want to know the truth. And, you know, if, you know, your God or, someone else's God, like I interviewed, a Sikh on my podcast, is my last interview I ever did. I interviewed a Sikh, never talked to someone of that faith before. And, you know, I gotta say, I don't believe in his God claims either. I don't see a reason to believe it. So, Yeah. That's just kind of where I'm coming from, is that, you know, I just look at like the Bible as, you know, being about as truthful as the Quran. You know, the Quran has true stuff that happens in it, has not true stuff that happens in it. And the Bhagavad Gita does, and the Book of Mormon does, you know, they all have true and not true things. And it's like, where do you differentiate? How do you differentiate the truth from the not truth? And, you know, where do you draw that line? And why do you draw the line differently in other doctrines, but not in this one? That's kind of where I'm coming from.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, there's so many, well, I guess we're going to have a volume four. There's so many different things that we could talk
about. Dude, I'm always down.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I just want to kind of reflect on some of what we're talking about here. I do think there are qualitative differences between the Bible, the historical verifiability of it, the credentials of it, than any of these other religious texts. But I think something that is clear to me, which maybe I already knew, is that there's no evidence available. Not to say there's no evidence. Like I said, we have a disagreement of what evidence is convincing or is reliable or not. But it's clear to me that there's no amount of evidence that could be presented to you that is going to suddenly turn you into a Christian. At least with the evidence that is currently available, there's no amount of it. It's not like a lack of knowledge necessarily, or even.
Yeah. I mean, I would partially agree with that. So like at the moment with the proclaimed evidence that, you know, Christians and Christianity and, you know, even Islam or Hinduism claims to have, no, I mean, if they're going to keep presenting that same stuff, no, I'm not going to believe that, because I have reason not to believe this. So now if someone could present, you know, something new, you know, I always investigate these things. I'm not one to just, you tell me something and I just up and deny it. You know, I actually investigate these things. That's again, kind of my whole shtick, is that I'm, you know, I investigate things that are claimed. I would definitely say that, you know, there are ways that there is, who knows, how do I know that maybe you could say something in the next sentence, you could say something that is so absurdly baffling, something so otherworldly, that it could convince me that there is a God. Who am I to say that you couldn't, the next words to come out of your mouth could be the reason why I become Christian? I truly wouldn't know. And that's kind of why I did my podcast, is, you know, how do I know unless I talk to these people?
Yeah. And kind of what I was trying to get at is, I if that statement from somebody does come, it's definitely not going to be an evidential kind of historical. I just don't think that's possible, which I kind of already knew that even, you know, the message of Jesus and the message of the scriptures is pretty clear that it's by faith, right? That there's a spiritual or existential knowing that happens when a person comes to believe in Jesus and give their life to follow him. And so, you know, maybe these three conversations we have were just confirmation of what I already knew, which is, yeah, not that these kinds of things are not helpful, but ultimately people don't come to have a life transformation and just suddenly give their life to follow Jesus because of these kinds of evidences, but it's a spiritual and existential kind of knowing. It's something that you can only know by faith. That's kind of why I was sort of, with today's conversation, I was interested in sort of removing ourselves from just the informational and trying to kind of get at some of the spiritual claims of the Bible. So,
and just kind of where I would come from is, as far as like, if you have to believe it on faith, then, I mean, I guess you could say, no, I never would believe it if that is truly the only way to come to the conclusion that, you know, Jesus is my Lord and Savior, or, you know, something to that effect. If you have to have faith in it and able to believe it, then no, I never will believe it, because I come from the standpoint that faith is not a reliable way to truth. It's not a reliable pathway to truth. Faith is belief in something in lieu of evidence. It's you believe in something, you know, on faith. You just believe it. And I just can't do that. You know, I just can't. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, I would think that a God would understand that and, you know, humor me a little bit, you know, and being like, hey, you know, knock down your ego a little bit, and, you know, here's why I exist type of thing. But, you know, I'm almost 10 years into doing this truth seeking all day, every day, and, you know, no dice. And I like to think I'm a pretty open person here, you know, willing to understand it. And, you know, I keep reading the book and I keep looking for the evidences, and I just keep getting further and further away from it. And if it's just on faith, I just can't believe that.
Yeah. And I think that is pretty much what it is going to come down to. Like I said, I'm not going to accept that there's no evidence. I don't accept that. I think we have a difference of opinion there, but it's very clear from the Bible, even itself, and the message of Jesus, that faith is required. Actually, it's pretty much the only requirement. You could not know any of the historical information or the scientific information or whatever, but faith is the minimum requirement. And so if that is the stopper, then yeah, it'll always be the blocker.
What would be my contention is that, you know, I, as a person, just can't take things on faith. So I would hope that God would have some humor on me and, you know, show me something, you know, just something, you know, he knows what it would take. But instead, he's going to allow me, you know, obviously we had this conversation a little bit on my show and on your show, but like, you know, what's going to happen to me then after death, if your God is real? And he just, you know, I was supposed to have faith and he was never going to prove that he existed to me. Well, I mean, I'm going to go to hell by the terms of the Bible and, you know, the Christian faith. I mean, I'm going to hell. So then it's like, I would put myself in your shoes. Like, why would I want to follow a guy that's going to send someone like me? You know, I like to think I'm not a bad person. You know, why would I want to follow someone that's going to send this pretty okay dude to hell forever, like for all of eternity? You can't even begin to fathom or register that length of time for the, you know, I was Christian up until 21, 22. So for the last 20, 30 years of my life, I just didn't believe it, but I'm going to eternal punishment for that. I mean, why would you want to hang out with someone like that?
Yeah. I mean, that's another big topic in terms of what is hell? What is final judgment, if such a thing exists? What is the true nature of it? So that's maybe another conversation. But yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. And I think, I mean, if we're being honest, I think a lot of Christians do struggle with that question. Like, do all of these people really deserve eternal punishment just because they didn't follow Jesus? And so, you know, I mean,
and
I think
see,
if we're being
where
honest.
You ask the question, where you would ask the question, like, do these people deserve it? I don't even need to ask that question. I say these people don't deserve it.
Well,
they don't
it depends
deserve
on,
eternal punishment.
I think there's a lot of factors, though, that go into that, to answering that question of do they deserve it, which is, one, what exactly is the nature of this judgment, right? And
the
and
thing
what
is
makes
I would disagree no matter what you say next, I'm going to disagree with it wholeheartedly with my chest, because I don't think there is anything, there is nothing that anybody could do to me or to another person that would justify infinite, eternal punishment, torture, nonstop, never ending, forever and ever and ever
well,
and
again,
ever.
And so
for finite crimes, it's just not justified.
Well, that's why I'm saying, again, it depends on what your understanding of this punishment is. So that is one view of what, you know, hell is. There are other views. Now, granted, your view is the mainstream evangelical view.
It's the canon view.
It's not the canon view. It's the mainstream evangelical traditional view. But there are other views. There are also views that final judgment is that you don't get to live forever, but that at some point you cease to exist, which is still a punishment. I mean, that's kind of sad to think, like, yeah, I would like to live forever with my, you know, loved ones. And it will be sad to think that somebody will not get that gift of eternal life and would cease to exist because they refused, you know, the grace of God. And so not to say that that's not a significant punishment, but it's maybe a little bit more understandable where, okay, if God's saying, hey, I reached out to you, I gave you so many opportunities, you didn't want me, you don't want this life, so I'm giving you what you asked for. You will not enter into this life.
And see, that's where I would say, but God, I have been reaching out to you. I've been reading your book every damn day for 10 years. I've been searching for you. I've prayed for you in my, not recently, you know, obviously way before my second read through the Bible, but I've cried for you. I've went to church. I have screamed for you. You know, I've truly sought you out for my life, and I don't have that evidence yet. And you're going to punish me because you won't give me the evidence, you know? And so I don't get to, you know, even if it's not eternal torture forever and ever, I don't get to exist in this afterlife with you or with my family or whoever it may be, or whatever it may be. I don't get to do that. And I don't know what else I could have possibly done. You know, like, if I'm open to it, I'm ready for it, I want the evidence, I want to believe you, it seems like a God problem. It seems like a you problem. I've done my part.
Yeah. I mean, mysteries, honestly, I can't answer that. Yeah. I'm not you, so I don't know the full extent of your experience and what ways in which God has or has not tried to speak to you. I mean, so I'm going to at least allow the possibility that maybe God has been reaching out to you in some way that you are not receptive to or not able to hear for some reason. Blind to for some reason, but
exactly. I mean, so that's the thing, is that I'm open to it. I'm looking for it all the time. And, you know, he's God. He should be able to make it pretty obvious. You know, if he's making it so incredibly subtle to where I don't even notice it, I mean, what's even the point?
That's true.
You know, and even trying to convince me or anything, like, just, you know, if God exists, I don't know, push over my water bottle or something. Like, it literally, it's sometimes as simple as that. Like, literally, if my water bottle sitting right here were to fall off of my desk right now, I will believe that God is real. Okay. Like, it's sometimes it's as simple as that, but it's like, God, it's just not happening. Here's my water bottle still sitting here on the edge of my desk.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm open to it. You know, it's.
Yeah. And I don't know why he doesn't just knock over the water bottle. I think what I do know is if we follow the in the scriptures, the way that Jesus reaches people and the way that I feel like he has reached me and other people, the way that he reaches people is through conviction, through the what we would call the gospel message, right? This idea that, wow, something has gone terribly wrong with the human race, that there's a brokenness in us. You know, not just some of us, but collectively as a species, there's this brokenness in us, and there's something in us that tends us towards destruction. And what the Bible's claim would be, maybe going back to try to bring it full circle, going back to what I was trying to see if we could arrive at with our conversation, there's this persistent brokenness in the human race. And I think we can all see it. We can all feel it. We watch the news. You can see there's something desperately wrong with humanity. And basically, what God is saying is, it's because you're separated from me, and that connection with me is broken because of your sin. And there's something that needs to be done about that sin problem. And basically the answer is redemption. That, you know, if you're accepting the gospel message, one, it's, I have to come to a conviction like, yeah, it's true. I mean, I see the brokenness of humanity, but I don't just see it out there in them. I see it in me. You know, maybe I'm not out there killing anybody, but that thing in them that causes them to do what they do, I see it in me too. I see that seed of selfishness. I see that seed of greed. I see that seed of pride in me. Maybe I grew up in a different environment and I don't express it to the degree, but I see the disease in me too. And what is the solution to that problem, right? And that is how the Bible describes people coming to know or have evidence, is the conviction of these spiritual truths, that there's a brokenness in humanity, yeah. We're separated from God, we're guilty, and there's a judgment that is well-deserved, but Jesus has come to be our Redeemer, and he's offered a sacrifice so that we can have that forgiveness. And it's that kind of a knowledge that happens for somebody to come and believe and come and follow Jesus. Now, that might not be the kind of evidence that you're looking for, but that's the kind of evidence he's
going to
offer. Kind of
how I see that is that, like, yeah, you know, again, I read the Bible, and I say, you know, these are, you know, whoever wrote this book is saying that we're broken and sinful and, you know, need to repent for, you know, yada, 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 give our life to Jesus, etc. But why? Mm-hmm. Why do I need to believe you? Faith? So what it would come down to me is the reason why I would believe that something is quote unquote wrong with humans is not because of our inherent sin or anything like that, but we're a bunch of smart monkeys. We're a bunch of really smart monkeys with a God complex and really love to blow each other up and have control. And, I think that's bottom line why the world is the way it is that we're monkeys in a power struggle. You know, who's going to be the top monkey? Mm-hmm. You know, then it that's really what it is. Bottom line is that evolutionarily, we want power. We want to be on top. We want to be number one. That's ingrained in our DNA as humans and as animals.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you in that if I was an atheist, then I would have the exact same conclusion that at the end of the day, we're just animals. We're monkeys. We want power. I seek mine because what other reason do I have not to seek my own benefit over someone else? And if that tramples on somebody else's rights or happiness or, you know, whatever, who cares, right? You know, I mean, obviously I don't want to have to pay any kind of consequences for that because, you know, again, I'm seeking my own best life. But in terms of like whether something is right or wrong or, you know, whether war is righteous or unrighteous or, you know, whether I should, you know, be altruistic. Yeah. I mean, if I was an atheist, I would totally agree with you. It's just, everybody's just trying to get their own. And there's no reason I could give to anybody why they shouldn't do that. And I completely agree with that assessment. I would say though, again, kind of going back to different kinds of knowledge, I think even though that's the cold, hard logic of it, if we're just here and we're just animals, I have no reason to hold myself to any kind of standard. I should just do what makes me happy and what allows me to get the most benefit in my life. But I think most people, it's really hard to accept that cold, hard logic. I think most of us, if we look within and examine whether we really truly believe that is true, and we live in an amoral world where there is no such thing as good or evil or right or wrong, that these are all just fictions that we've created to sort of get people to behave in society, I think most of us can't really believe that murder being wrong is just my opinion. Genocide being wrong is just my opinion. I don't think anybody, it's hard to really accept that.
Yeah. I mean, bottom line, it's sad and it's dark and it's gross, mm-hmm. but I mean, bottom line, that's what it is. I mean, it's cold, hard truth and it sucks and it's really gross, but you know, even as an atheist, I'm willing to look at that and say, okay, well, I want to make, you know, so I look at it as I do still have reason. I do still have purpose. You know, I don't need to have like a Bible or a God or a Jesus belief to still believe that I have a purpose or that I still have morals. They're just subjective to me. And do I think that my morals are better than a lot of other people's? Yeah, I do. That's subjective to me, though. Yeah, I could think that, you know, murdering grandma is a bad idea, but, you know, my neighbor thinks that murdering grandma is a great idea. You know, how am I going to prove him that that's wrong? Well, what I do is what makes me happy is making other people happy. How do I make other people happy? Well, I don't want to hurt them. They don't like being hurt. You know, humanism is name of the game right here. You know, humanism and well-being. So I put people's well-being and happiness before even my own. And what, because that makes me happy is seeing other people happy, making other people happy, doing acts of kindness to make people happy. And I think spreading those morals is more altruistic and overall more objectively good than ending the life of someone before they're able to enjoy it. Not to say that, again, morals are subjective. So that person's still going to believe, well, that's stupid that you think that, you know, killing people is wrong. I think that's dumb. And I think that killing people is the right thing to do. Okay. Well, that's that person's opinion, and maybe they shouldn't be left out in society so that other people, because not sorry, but I'm going to lock the person up who's going to end that person's life so they can be locked up for a little bit, chill out. This person can live their life and do the things that they want to do, and they can come out when they're ready, you know, when they're ready to be an adult, when they're ready to hang out. If that makes me a bad, immoral person and that we're living by my subjective morals, so be it. I truly don't care, but killing people's wrong. And,
yeah. You're okay. You accept that morality is subjective, and you're okay with the fact that, hey, okay, it's subjective, but if enough of us agree and have the power to enforce our vision of what is moral on a weaker group of people, because we feel like they're hurting the rest of us.
I wouldn't use that term.
Well, doesn't it ultimately amount to that?
Not necessarily, because they can be strong people. It's a matter of...
You can only enforce it if you're stronger than, or at least have more power,
strength,
more
strength influence. Isn't necessarily a thing. So there's strength in numbers, people believing in the same thing, but you can't force people to believe. So,
yeah, you can't force them to believe it, but you can lock them up because he doesn't agree with the majority, which is power.
Not agreeing with the majority, but ending the life of another. We're not looking at it as majority or anything like that. We're not looking at it in the terms of numbers and statistics. We're looking at, you are ending that person's life, and that person cannot enjoy their life and do the things that they want to do because you are choosing to end it short. So you're going to go away for a little bit. You're going to learn why that is not a good thing to do, and why, I guess you could say, why Calvin believes it's not a good thing to do and why he believes that. And then you can watch some stuff if you want on why people think that is a good thing to do. So they give them the choice, but they can come out and they can either kill someone and go back to jail and think about it again. Or they can come out and be a decent human being and learn to love each other and, you know, live life and do things together rather than end
people. But if they can never, learn to live in society the way that they should, you feel like they need to be separated away?
Yes, if need be.
So here's just one thought that I'll present to you, right? Because that is very similar to the concept of judgment. It is very simple.
Not necessarily.
Right.
So, because I'm not an almighty, all powerful God that's going to send people away forever for all of eternity. I'm just going to lock these people up for maybe, you know, who knows how long. Couldn't tell you. But I'm not going to punish these people forever.
Yeah. I guess I'm just trying to point out that it seems like you feel like it would be okay from a human justice standpoint to segregate those who refuse to basically live as we think that they should. Yeah. But it seems like God can't.
Yeah, if you can't play nice, then
that's immoral.
If you can't play nice or say something nice, then don't say anything at all. So we'll separate each other. Mm-hmm. You guys can go kill each other all over here if you want. You can go kill each other all you want over here if you want to do that. But me and my people are going to be over here and we're going to do our own thing. Or we're going to lock you guys up because you're the one guy in this whole society that wants to kill people for some odd reason. So you're going to go away and like learn why we don't do that and like what the purpose of us not doing that is. But that's not sending people away forever.
Yeah. I don't know. To me, that's still just, and we can agree to disagree here. To me, that sounds an awful lot like heaven and hell.
But how
it sounds very similar,
like heaven and hell?
Because basically what God is doing is he's saying, look, you have this life I'm giving you every opportunity to turn to what is right, to turn to a life of love, to accept this thing that I'm offering to you and become who I created you to be. But I'm not going to force you mm-hmm. to. But at some point, there is a cutoff, right? Because if God never cuts it off, then that means suffering, pain, evil will exist forever. So at some point, he says, there is a cutoff that's coming one day, and I am going to separate, right? There are those who will humble themselves and accept love, basically, and who they should be, repentance, whatever. But those who refuse, I'm going to segregate them away from
forever.
Us. Forever. Maybe forever.
That's what maybe, the Bible says. Maybe not. Forever. So that's what I'm going to believe.
There is a stream of theology that says that hell might not be forever, and that if they will repent, if they will turn from their ways and finally realize, okay, you know what? I don't want to be separated from God and his people. I want to embrace, you know, humility and forgiveness and love, that they can come out. It's possible.
Okay, but what? But that's not what the Bible says. That's the thing. Is that like we're like I understand that these people are saying this and coming up with these theological justifications, but that's not what it says. So to me, it's just like, okay, I believe that when you die, a leprechaun's going to give you a kiss on the cheek. You know, that's what hell is. I don't know. Like that's about the truth value of it is.
It could also be that at some point God just says, sorry. And you know, you cease to exist. You don't get to live on.
And that's not fair. Into eternity. At least I allow these people to still exist and that they have a chance to get out and live life more and exist and rehabilitate. But God's not giving them these chances.
But how are you deciding that that's fair?
Torture them. You know, that's the thing is that I'm saying to lock these people away. Just lock them up. They can still have 3 meals a day, watch TV, play video games, whatever it is. They can still, you know, do things in a jail cell. They can still live to an extent in there while they rehabilitate. God is going to send these people to hell, and according to the Bible, forever. That's not at all what I'm trying to do. So that's why I would say that's not, because I'm not going to torture these people. I'm not going to throw these people into a pit of fire or, you know, anything to that matter, or allow other people to torture them, you know, throw them in a place. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that there's still justification for finite crimes, you know, regardless of what those may be. And yeah. And needless to say, me simply just not believing in God is considered a crime in Christianity, and that's punishable. So it's not the same as I wouldn't lock somebody up simply for not wanting to believe in me or to believe in the words that I say. I wouldn't say, well, then you're just going to go to hell. No, you're going to go to jail when you act on those beliefs. When you act on those beliefs and you harm other people, that's when you're going to get locked up. Not when you don't believe what I say. You can yell in my face and scream in my face and say you're not going to follow me all you want. Cool, great. Go cry somewhere else. Bye. But I'm not going to lock you up forever in jail anyways, just because.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think that the way that you're framing it, the way that you're framing the decision that God is putting to us is, you know, that's one way to frame it. I would say that the way that maybe the Bible frames it is that we were created in his image. That knowledge of who we are is in here. We have suppressed it, turned away from it, and now we have fallen into this corrupted state and we need redemption. He's offered a way for redemption, not by earning it. That's the difference between, you know, a Christian and, let's say, a Muslim or other faiths. It's not because he's offered redemption, but I don't earn it by, you know, following the 5 pillars or anything like that. He's offered it as a free gift. It's like a plea bargain, basically, that the condition is if I will confess, yes, you know what, I have denied you know, God, and I have denied who he is, and I am guilty, and I do need forgiveness, that if we'll confess that, the plea bargain is that he will impute what Christ, the sacrifice that he's made on our behalf.
And that's when I would end it with, I don't believe you, prove it. that would pretty much be it.
All right, Calvin, well, we've talked a lot. This interview did not go in the
does
exact
it ever
same.
Though I mean does it ever actually go the way that we plan? I mean, usually we just go off on tangents and just kind of,
yeah,
I don't even know what happens, but it's still fun. I still love coming on here and talking to you. So
yeah, no, I appreciate you sharing your thoughts, and you know, yeah, we want to hear what you really think, and I'm trying my best to share what I really think, and you know, in ways that are respectful, and I think we achieved that. You know, I know that a lot of the people who are listening to this, you know, they they think about you and they're hoping that at some point
I'll like blow up and be like, oh, yeah, blah, 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 you know.
they're hoping that Jesus is going to reveal himself to you. I hope it doesn't make you feel weird knowing that there's a group of Christians out there who are praying for you to come to have that kind of revelation from him.
I've had a group of Christians praying for me for 10 years. So let me,
well, we've added a few more.
Like as Creed would say, with arms wide open.
So Calvin, let us know, like, if people want to connect with you more, how can they find you?
Yeah. Easiest way to find me right now is on TikTok, more than likely. I have about 30,000 followers over there. You can follow me at Unquestionable Calvin, just one word. You can follow me on Instagram at Unquestionable Calvin. I just made a Facebook page, just Unquestionable Calvin on there. So you can look that up. I just post kind of TikToks and memes and stuff over there, just random stuff that, you know, maybe I don't want my family seeing or that they don't want to see. I'm on YouTube, Unquestionable Calvin. Again, I don't have a whole lot of content over there yet. I'm still kind of on a bit of a break here, trying to figure out what I want to do and everything. And then I'm a social media manager for the Secular Alliance of Michigan, a nonprofit here in Southeast Michigan, and Michigan Atheists, the 501c3 organization here. I'm their social media manager, so you can follow them on social media. Where we have Facebook groups where we just talk about stuff. Christians are welcome as long as you're cordial and, you know, you're not here to fight or embarrass anybody. You're welcome. You know, friendly debate is welcome in these groups. It's encouraged, in fact, but no nastiness allowed. I'm the admin, so I don't allow nastiness. You can come join us there. I'm pretty much everywhere. If you just look up Unquestionable Calvin, or if you want to listen to my podcast that I'm no longer doing, it's Unquestionable with Calvin Smith. It's on Spotify and YouTube and all other streaming platforms. Again, I haven't made any content since July with that, but there's about 40, 42 episodes that you can listen to there, where I talked to Jay actually on there once. So you can actually go there and listen to the interview that I had with him.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Calvin. Appreciate you taking time to be here on the show again.
Absolutely. Thanks. I appreciate it.
The closing song for this episode, Do Not Delay, is by Maria Segerholm. The Daily Sabbath is a Provision podcast production. If you're enjoying the show, please leave us a rating and review and share this episode with someone. You can also check out all of our links in the episode description.
By my side, even when I hide from